Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
You've heard of PhDs in science, you've heard of PhDs in medicine, you've heard of PhDs in education, but have you ever heard of a PhD in confectionery? That's what one Queensland woman is working hard to complete. Toni Rissen is her name. She's a children's author, former teacher, also has a particular interest in cultural history and contemporary Australian life, and her doctoral thesis looks at the history of lollies in Australia and how they reflect social change. The lolly lady is with us right now. Toni Rissen, welcome to Open House.
Hello.
This is so fascinating. This is a radio programmer's dream, really. We're talking about all these serious things tonight, and then you come along with this PhD in lollies. Now, tell me about the first interest that you had in lollies and where you thought there might actually be a doctoral thesis in it.
Well, I'm really interested in those things in our culture that get overlooked because we think they're trivial. And, you know, children's culture generally is seen as not the earth-shattering things that most attract our interest. Mm. And lollies would have to be paramount in that world, wouldn't they? Because they're so small, they're cheap, they're everywhere. Mm. And that got me interested in it. And as I've looked into it more, I just think, I don't know why someone hasn't done this research before, because they just play such a big part in our lives.
Yes, well, I was talking to some people across the weekend about it, and we got into these really quite emotive conversations about sherbet and, you know, Whiz Fizz and all these other things. And it took us right back to our childhood, and all these really fond, warm memories came back. So you're absolutely right. Now, you say lollies have actually played a historical part in the life of children. Give us some kind of examples why, and also an example of how it's actually given them their first taste of economics.
Well, that's where I started off with this project. And when you do a PhD, it starts as a small thing and then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger as you do your research, and then you've got to start narrowing it down because otherwise you end up with, you know, 200,000 words instead of 80. Hmm. And so I started off looking at it from an economic perspective, and I looked at the people who were born during the Depression in the war years up until the end of the Second World War. Then I looked at the baby boomers, and then I looked at Generation XY, and the different access that they've got to money, how they get their money, what they therefore buy and what they want from lollies. And I just found it fascinating coming to the realisation that we live our life as a consumer, and the very first thing we will ever buy for ourselves probably has been a lolly. Mm. Because they are cheap, it lets kids into that consumer world. I mean, they could buy anything if, you know, they've got sixpence or halfpenny or whatever it was, but because lollies are cheap, that then gives kids the right to have the authority over an adult, let's say, for as long as it takes them to sell what they want. So they've played a really important role in our lives, and there's quite a lot of, you know, in the paper and TV shows where they do break up the generations in that sort of order, and you see different responses to the world in general, but different consumer behaviour from those groups. Mm. And I've seen that in the stories that people tell me about their lollies, like a Depression era kid, for example, will have picked a lolly that lasted a really long time because that was what they saw as value for money because they didn't have so much money. Yeah. Whereas the baby boomers, that's the generation that started rolling Jaffas down the aisles at the theatre. Now, mm-hmm. a Depression kid would never have done that with a lolly.
Yes.
But the baby boomers were starting to see confectionery as part of their entertainment, part of a world of entertainment that they were moving into.
So what was the hard lolly for the Depression-era person? Was it kind of a bit of an escape, or what was it?
I think they had a lot less entertainment in their lives. You know, they had to make their own fun, and so I think a lolly was a diversion for them, certainly. But, you know, if they were able to get a penny in a week, they were lucky, a lot of kids. You know, they were relying really on the adults in their lives, and people in that era, they just didn't have a lot of spare money. So, you know, if a kid got a penny, they were doing very well. Mm. And they would really think carefully about how they'd spend that penny. And because once it was gone, that was it.
That was it, yeah.
And so they wanted something that would give them that time value. And I have had stories that just show such sophistication on the part of, say, people who are eight. There's one lady who'd be in her late 70s now, and she got a penny every day. She was probably one of the wealthier kids, and that penny was to catch the bus home. And more often than not, she decided she'd walk home and spend that penny on a lolly. And she could get 24 aniseed balls for a penny, which is a lot of lolly. But she didn't really like aniseed balls, so she'd get a halfpenny's worth of aniseed balls because that would give her the time value that she'd spend the other halfpenny on something she really wanted, even though it wouldn't last very long.
Yeah.
And I just think that's amazing.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. This is Open House. Tanya Risson is doing her PhD on lollies and their place in Australian culture. Fascinating stuff. So when did we first start rolling Jaffas down the, you know, cinema aisles?
Well, it's really hard with a lot of this stuff. People remember it. They remember it very passionately, but they can't really even tell you how old they were, let alone, you know, when they actually started doing it. All I know is that Jaffas were invented in 1931, but I've had, looking at childhood memoirs and people who do memoir sort of compendiums of things, I haven't really got any evidence of them being rolled in the 30s.
Okay.
Yeah. Clive James and, there's probably three or four people who were baby boomers that do mention actually, well, Clive James doesn't mention rolling them, he mentions throwing them.
Yeah.
So I think it was in the 40s, and I think about the 70s, theatre owners just put their foot down and banned them because they were just making such a mess and were so hazardous because they were like throwing stones around in an auditorium.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But some of these memories are Western Australia, some of them are Brisbane, some of them are down south. So I think it was a fairly widespread practice. So for about 25 years, I'd say.
There you go. So for the Depression era, they went for the gobstoppers because they lasted long, they didn't have a lot, and it was kind of their special little form of entertainment. The baby boomers come along, and they've got a little bit more discretionary income as kids, and so they start throwing their lollies around. Generation X and Y, what's their feelings with lollies?
That's the chapter I'm writing at the moment.
Yeah.
I think these kids, because they've got so much of everything, entertainment, food experiences, money, they are really going for lollies that are an extreme sort of a sensation. They want they want an adventure. And so the sour lollies that probably Warheads, I think
yes,
they were called.
Yes, yes. Yeah. My brother, who's Generation Y, he jumped into the Warheads and the lolly gobble bliss bombs.
Yeah, so that's sort of something, an adventure that's happening in your mouth, something really extreme. And the inclination towards disgust as well is very strong. So kids, you know, some of their confectionery's got slime. It looks like slime. It's got monsters with, you know,
eyeballs
noses
falling out. And
yeah,
isn't that strange?
Popping candy and whiz fizz. And I'm reluctant to say that this is a totally new phenomenon because sherbet is an ancient thing, and Alan Marshall mentions it coming along when he was a kid, and he was born, what, 1902 or something?
Yeah, well, I'm a Generation X, and certainly sherbet was right there, the whiz fizz packets and everything. And but also I liked the other ones as well, you know, like the strawberries and cream ones.
Yeah.
And all of those kinds of ones.
That's right. I think it's hard to say these kids always had these and these kids always had these. It's what I'm really mapping is a general trend that I'm linking to that access to money. But some of the more recent stories that I've got are of kids snorting sherbet. So they pretend that it's cocaine and use a credit card and divide it up.
Oh.
Like they see in the movies and actually inhale it.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that.
No, and I had had a couple of stories of it, and I just mentioned it to one of my kids being all, you know, little darlings.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, have you ever heard of this? And they just rolled their eyes and went, oh, Mum, everybody does that. We make it in chemistry. We make sherbet in chemistry and do it.
Oh.
And I just said, oh, I can't believe you do that. How often have you done that? And my girl said, well, you wouldn't do it more than once.
No, there you
so
go.
It's one of those sort of rite of passage things.
Okay, it might be an anti-drug lesson in its own right then, maybe. You never know. Now, before we let you go, just how are Australian lollies different from lollies in other parts of the world?
If you get onto internet forums that talk about the lollies we used to have when we were younger, and there's quite a lot of them, as soon as you start reading them, you can become quickly aware that you're not on an Australian group because you don't know the names of any of the lollies. You know, they're Mary Janes and Sparkles and think, what are these things? And that's when you realise that the lollies we've grown up with are uniquely Australian lollies. And that's part of my research has been to sort out on the confectionery aisle in the supermarket which ones were actually ours and which ones are overseas ones, because the sad thing is that most of our wonderful confectionery companies now belong to Nestle or Cadbury, so my kids don't even realise which ones were Australian.
Yes.
And whether you can say that we've got an inclination towards one particular sweet or another, some people say that coconut and mint are Australian sort of preferences, but there's lots of coconut and mint
And what are Mexican lollies like?
Well, because I talk to people about confectionery, I've got friends from Mexico and also from Asian countries, and the Mexican kids apparently have quite hot lollies from very young. Yeah. And even American stuff, there's a hot cinnamon flavour there that's pretty popular, and there's something called an atomic fireball that I tried to eat one time, and I could not keep it. And I'm someone who likes chili. Yeah. I couldn't keep it in my mouth long enough to eat it. And it actually burned the surface of my tongue. Damn. So, I had to recover before I could even have another go at it.
Extreme lollies. And what about Chinese lollies?
Yeah, well, the sour plum that's got that...
Oh, yes. I had those when I was a kid.
Yeah. Oh, one of my friends brought me one of those along, and I thought, oh, no, this is definitely an acquired
Oh, well, they actually turn your whole tongue numb after a while. And I think every now and then I'll actually go into a Chinese shop and I'll buy some, and I won't be able to go back to it for another 3 years.
But
they're very nice for a while.
Oh, very and odd.
I guess the Americans also would get into the whole peanut butter thing too,
That's
wouldn't
right.
they?
Right, they have a lot of peanut butter stuff, and we don't have that at all. But I've noticed just since I started doing this research, just in the last couple of years, there's a lot of American confectionery on the shelves here now. So it's going to become even more difficult for people to sort out which ones are ours. And that's partly what I'm documenting in mine, which ones are Sweet Acres and McRobertson's and Allen's, Hoadley's, they're the Australian ones.
Yeah. So as you're kind of, working through your PhD, I mean, what's the one great lesson that you've picked up that you'll share with all and sundry once the PhD's finished?
Well, my thesis is that lollies are magic. And I'm proposing the idea that the social world is really divided into two worlds, the ordinary world and the magic world. And lollies, really, kids don't think of them as being ordinary in any way. They are more like, if we look at the economic example, they're like a magic wand. They give the kids power. If you want to look at the health aspect, they're the poison apple, the thing that looks great and we can't resist, that tempts us, but it's bad for us. I've got one chapter that's about Alice's flamingo. You know, in Alice in Wonderland, where she has to play croquet with that flamingo?
Oh, yeah.
Well, kids quite often use lollies. They don't actually, they don't turn into something else, but they use them as balls or as some other sort of thing to play a game with. They're used as toys and games. So I'm framing my whole...
Lollies and magic.
Lollies and magic.
I like it. Well, thanks for your time tonight, Tony. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I've had a great time.
Yeah, Tony Rissen there, who's a children's author and who's doing a PhD in Australian lollies. Love it.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.